On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Usually when you hear mention of Dublin Airport these days, it's to do with the number of fines people are getting for trying to head away on holiday. But there is still a decent level of traffic there of people who are flying for what they at least claim is essential reasons. In fact, in the course of the 2 hours that we're on air this lunchtime, there are 7 arrivals due into Dublin Airport. That is still way busier than it was way back when it opened, back in Collinstown Airport days. In fact, even just having 2 flights a day back in those days was considered busy. Desmond Fitzgerald and Mabel McDonnell are 2 veterans of the Irish Revolution. They had 4 children. One of them is a fairly familiar name, Gareth Fitzgerald, the former Taoiseach. But another son, Desmond Jr., was the designer of the original Dublin Airport. And it was an airport opened during a global war. And it remains, actually, despite, you know, some of the modern facade that it has, it's still a masterpiece of Art Deco architecture, even though it is hidden now among the more modern landscape of Terminal 2. Donald Fallon has been doing some digging and he's here to tell us all about it. Donald, good afternoon.
What I would give for a Ryanair flight somewhere nice at the moment, you know.
Even somewhere not nice, just a Ryanair flight anywhere, just to go and sit somewhere else and just see street signs in a different language.
I'll never complain about the scratch cards again.
No, the bullseye baggies. Other brands are available. The Desmond Fitzgerald family, they did produce some fairly remarkable lives, didn't they?
Absolutely. And you know, Desmond Fitzgerald and Mabel McDonnell have known it. They both found themselves in the GPO at Easter 1916, that their kids would go on to play kind of remarkable roles and very different roles in the life of an Irish state. And what I like about the Fitzgeralds politically, they were very, very different. You know, Garrett Fitzgerald would remember his mother as a Republican, a suffragette and a socialist, but mainly the first. Mm. And his father really was anything but a socialist, a very conservative member of the first government of the state, the pro-treaty Cumannaigh Ale. So they were very, very different, but they made it true, you know. And I love Gareth Fitzgerald's father's recollections of being in the GPO during the Rising and just the helplessness and the hopelessness of it. He talks about meeting the O'Rahilly. "How long do you think we can hold out?" I asked. "By a miracle, we might last for 24 hours," he replied, "but I don't think we'll go for that long." I thought his estimate extremely optimistic. But somehow, wow, he and his wife survived and they made it out. And look, if you look at the course of 20th century Irish history, to have been in the Rising was a great launchpad for a political career. The next best thing was to have a parent in the Rising. And if you had both parents in the Rising and in the GPO, well, I mean, that was a good springboard for a fine career in Irish public life.
And that's what helped to get Gareth to all the places that he was. But Desmond Fitzgerald Jr. is just as big a name in his own field, isn't he?
Absolutely. And, you know, he's the most recognised and one of the most recognised and celebrated architects of 20th century Ireland. And his story is really deeply intertwined with the broad story of architecture in 20th century Ireland, UCD, where he lectured in architecture. And what I like about the story is he didn't only give us one of the great buildings of the century, and make no mistake about it, the original Dublin Airport Terminal is one of the great 20th century buildings in Ireland. But he also gave us some, as we'll hear today, that were more controversial and which people generally don't seem to like in Dublin. So his story's great. And I mean, he was born 10 years, Gareth Fitzgerald was born 10 years after the Rising in 26, but Desmond was born 5 years before it. And there's a lovely little anecdote that Patrick Pearce in the GPO was said to be uncomfortable with the fact that, you know, both his parents were there, his mother and father, and encouraged Mabel to go home. But when you look at his childhood, it's decidedly middle class, you know, Clongowes, Belvedere, time spent studying in Switzerland, and then on to UCD to study architecture. And incredibly, he actually did his college thesis on the need for an airport in Dublin. And we've looked at that before on this slot, you know, the early days of Irish aviation, Iona National Airways. The story of Irish aviation begins in a real kind of ramshackle way. You know, you have kind of enthusiasts that are trying their best, an airport that's basically a field up in Finglas. Even when Aer Lingus comes along, there isn't a proper commercial airline and they're flying out of military bases. But this young lad, Fitzgerald, even as a student in UCD, kind of tapped into the need for something else, that there had to be a commercial airport somewhere in Dublin. And he felt that he was the man that could make it a reality.
When you talk about the original airport, by the way, people still can see it, you know, the next time that they're back out of Dublin Airport, whenever that might be. If you're going down to, I think it's the 400 gates, it's the wing of the airport that Ryanair traditionally fly out of now. If you look out the windows on the left-hand side, you can see it, the original old Collinstown Airport. It's a fine-looking building. It was kind of overshadowed by the big brutalist Terminal 1 that's there since then, but it's still, it's a fine-looking place.
Yeah.
He learned...
And people always complain about that long walk, you know, that kind of 45-minute walk to your plane in the deepest bowels of the 400s. But it is absolutely stunning, the view that you get and that kind of never-ending escalator out over the original terminal building.
Desmond learned from the best of the best and a man who would go on to have a pretty big role in transforming London.
He spent some time kind of studying and working under the great Patrick Abercrombie, who was one of the, if not the greatest city planner of the 20th century. He came to public prominence really as the man who redesigned London after the Blitz, which was an absolutely enormous task. But this guy, Patrick Abercrombie, basically, you know, he saw cities as Lego blocks, if you will, and it was this task to reassemble them and for them to make more sense. After the Rising and the War of Independence, the Civil War, he was the one who kind of composed this great plan for Dublin. All kinds of really interesting proposals, most of which we never followed. A new national theatre at Parnell Square, a new Catholic cathedral in the area around Capel Street. But he was a brilliant, brilliant planner. And he kind of regarded geography as the basis of all good planning. You know, you had to work what you had and thought about very kind of complex issues of planning in a way that I think had a real influence on anyone who studied under him, including a young Fitzgerald. So, I mean, he learns from the best of the best as far as planning is concerned. And when he comes back to Ireland, look, nothing looks as good on your CV as having worked with Abercrombie. He leads a team for the Office of Public Works with the unenviable task, an airport for Dublin.
By the way, we should mention that, and we've touched upon it this time before, we must do a slot some weekend about Eamon de Valera's plans for the overhaul of Merrion Square once upon a time. I'm only reminded of it because when you talk about the Catholic cathedral that he wanted to put on Grafton Street, this is Abercrombie, that he wanted to put on Capel Street. De Valera wanted to put a cathedral on the side of Merrion Square, and the only reason why it didn't happen is because the Archbishop McQuaid wanted to put it on Merrion Square. He wanted to literally occupy all of the grass with a cathedral which is three times bigger than St. Paul's, and that's the reason why it never happened. I digress, and apologies for digressing. The job that Desmond had about designing an airport for Dublin probably came about at pretty much the worst time you can imagine.
Oh, God. I mean, from 1937 till 1940, the job is on. And I mean, the site is brilliant. Collinstown Aerodrome, that had formerly been an RAF base, believe it or not, after the War of Independence. And it had long been identified as having the potential for a civilian airport site. But they looked at other locations too, Finglas, and even some closer to the city, kind of in what we now know as the docks, the IFSC. Can you imagine planes flying
in? The airport was that close to town. Wow.
Would have been extraordinary and just unprecedented. But I mean, not only was the task difficult, the timing was awful. You have economic chaos, global war. And, you know, war always brings his old friends along with him. You know, inflation, a shortage of supplies, manpower, material. But when you look at the building, you really don't have a sense that it was built at a time of economic turmoil. And war, there's a real confidence about the building. And another thing I love about Terminal 1, when you look at it on that long walk, is that it really doesn't look like the terminal building of a nation that came to aviation so late in the day, you know, by comparison to most of our neighbours. So we had got on the wagon very, very late, and yet we had the finest airport of them all. And it's the best style of the day, you know, the Art Deco style, this kind of Art Nouveau style that had first appeared in France. And it changed everything, architecture, art, design, fashion. There's an elegance to that building, I think, which is just unmatched by anything else of its time in Dublin. And it's not surprising that the imperative for an airport came from the desk of Sean Lamass, because, you know, Lamass was such a believer in the global economy. But what good is a global economy without global connections? But a curious little bit of the story that's never really mentioned is that Lamass, of course, had fought in the Rising beside the parents of the airport's architect. Oh, I find that remarkable. So these two generations had met. And when you look at that building, I just see, anyone who's ever been to Hamburg, their magnificent airport opened in 1930. You see the influence of the best, really, of global airport architecture in what we have.
Sean Lamass, who fought in the Rising and then ended up having a son-in-law who didn't fight in the Rising, but was able to tag onto those Republican credentials to become a pretty formidable Taoiseach himself, and one who was a rival of Desmond Fitzgerald's brother. For an airport which is legitimately so beautiful, and I can't stress that enough, you do get to see it. Like, it's a beautiful building, but the world knew pretty much nothing about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And architectural students from all over the world will talk about the Hamburg airport all day long. You know, it's lavishly praised and it's the ship that launched 1,000 PhDs. But the world knew absolutely nothing about Dublin Airport because, you know, we had very extreme wartime censorship, of course. So things like the design of an airport is considered kind of top secret material and wasn't the kind of thing that, you know, little neutral era wanted in the public domain. So these plans, you know, even pictures of the airport, they don't really start appearing in the Irish press until the war is over, and by which point, you know, people have kind of generally lost interest in the architecture of an Irish airport. So, you know, there was a very real risk, I think, during the war that we could be invaded. It wasn't an outlandish thing to suggest that, a real possibility. And the joke in Irish political circles was that if we were invaded, we could probably defend ourselves for about 48 hours and use that time to appeal to whatever side hadn't invaded us for assistance.
Because we were so assiduously neutral that we just go begging to the other side. Yeah.
So you have this beautiful modernist airport and the world doesn't know about it. It literally opens at the worst time possible.
And I suppose part of the reason why the world didn't know much about it is because it wasn't the busiest of airports, even at this time of great flourishing of international aviation.
It's a lovely Irishman's diary on it that paints this great, you know, picture of a grim picture of a wartime airport. The very first Aer Lingus flight from the new airport took off in January 1940. And since the Second World War was well underway, traffic at the new airport was non-existent for the next 5 years. One flight a day was usual and two a day was considered busy. Often sheep were let graze on the runway. So you have this grass runway, about the only thing that wasn't, you know, incredibly modern about the airport. But once the war is over and people can go out there and have a look at it, it becomes this really unusual thing. It kind of becomes a tourist attraction for Irish people. You know, everyone wants to go out and see. They had a restaurant looking out onto the runway, and apparently they even hosted dances at night in the airport in the 1950s. So it was considered cutting edge, and it was something people were proud enough of to kind of trek out and have a look at it at a time when getting on a plane was a distant dream for most people. Just looking at a plane was a novelty in itself.
Other places that hosted dances at night that gave you a really good view was the top floor of the building at Bussorah, which is now the Department of Social Protection. It used to be a nightclub, apparently. It's now the canteen, and it has lovely views if you ever get to be up there. It has been contended, though, and this is quite salient to all of this, that Fitzgerald didn't design the airport alone.
Yeah, but yeah, in his defence, I would always say architects rarely do, you know, and I think things like Dublin Airport, they're always the end product of a team of architects. And the people who worked below him on the commission all played their part. But there's been a lot of debate and controversy on that matter. But in his defence, I would say he steered the ship. You know, he led the team that gave us that airport. And it's been described by one authority as the most adventurous, elegant, graceful and majestic example of the international style in Ireland. Not everything he built now has been described as elegant, graceful and majestic. We pass one of his buildings all the time in the city without knowing it, which is the O'Connell Bridge House. Young Dubliners know that one as the Heineken building.
Yes. because crass, of the ad going up its side, yes.
Absolutely crass, enormous advertising on its side. 12-storey office block, big, unpopular. And actually, despite the fact that it's 4 stories shorter than Liberty Hall, it was actually more unpopular than Liberty Hall when it first went up, because it kind of dominates the vista on the bridge there. And it said that when it went up, the lease on the Guinness, it used to be a Guinness sign before Heineken, the lease on the Guinness sign was bringing in more revenue than the office space. But that was, again, something that was very unusual. You know, a 12-storey office building is a great novelty in 1960s Dublin. And it also had a restaurant, believe it or not, on its top floor. And that kind of makes me laugh, because if you've ever been to New York, all the New Yorkers talk about the old Windows of the World restaurant on the 107th story of the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
We had this restaurant on the 12th story of O'Connell Bridge House.
I think that they were planning to do something similar with the new Liberty Hall if they do ever get planning permission for it. Dublin Airport's development, and we've mentioned this already, it's seen other very interesting buildings pop up, but you can still, and it's worth stressing, you can go and, if not visit, you can at least see Fitzgerald's masterpiece at certain times of the year.
Yeah, and there's other really interesting. I'm a great fan of Terminal 2. I really like Terminal 2, which was built between 2007 and 2010. And again, it kind of it evokes the best of modern design. And I love when you arrive in the airport and you drive underneath it. And as you said, you can still get that glimpse of Fitzgerald's original terminal from Terminal 1 as you make your way to a flight. It's like a time capsule. It's very strange to be in the modern terminal looking out at the old one. But the story of Fitzgerald's terminal building is still being written. It actually hosted a wedding during the first lockdown. A couple whose wedding was cancelled and rescheduled 3 times. Eventually, Dublin Airport reached out and said, you can have it. You can have it here. And the interior, which you can see in those wedding photos, is absolutely stunning. Just beautiful little touches, you know, inside as well, that gave the place that real sense of elegance. And in normal times, believe it or not, it opens up as part of the Open House Festival, which celebrates architecture. You can book a tour and go in and walk around the building. It's fantastic. But I think a lot of us, to be honest, you know, we're keen to get back to a functioning airport terminal whenever that next holiday may be. We live in hope.
You'll be looking out the next time you go on your Allegheny pilgrimage to the Berghain, just looking out to those windows on the left-hand side.
From gate 406 to Berlin.
Well, let's hope that those trips aren't too far away again. In the meantime, Donal, thank you as ever. Really fascinating oversight of Desmond Fitzgerald, his unusual origins and the architectural masterpiece that he designed that we so often overlook. Donal Fallon is a historian. He's the author of the Come Here To Me book, Talks, and he's a presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast about Dublin history.
On the record, on News Talk,
with Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.